everyone, and welcome to Better Done Than Perfect, a podcast for SaaS marketers and product people. Today, our awesome guest is Scott Markovitz, Fractional COO and startup mentor, and we're going to talk about using swag to grow your SaaS brand today. This show is brought to you by UserList, an email automation platform for SaaS companies. Onboard, engage, and nurture your customers, as well as marketing leads. To follow the best practices, download our free printable email planning worksheets at useless.com/worksheets. Hey, Scott.
How's it going? How are you?
Doing great. We're so excited to have this special moment to finally talk about swag, because that's like not a very popular topic for discussion, but like you say, everybody must do this if you're B2C and things like that.
Absolutely. No, every company is always looking for like these growth hacks. You know, what you do, try this and you try pricing things. And like, it's such an untapped resource that I've seen so many great opportunities with lots of companies that I've worked with, you know, going back 10 plus years, that it could be such an unlock for getting growth and virality, especially on social media. It's something that I definitely tell every startup I work with, you know, especially B2C, but also B2B, that they need to heavily invest in very early on.
Before we dive into that, tell us more about your own background story, what you do these days, and your fabulous story with Envision, because we kind of started this conversation with you speaking about Envision, but let's talk about that later. Tell us more about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So I joined the startup revolution, and especially the remote revolution, 11 years ago. I was the first official hire at Envision as an employee number 6 back in the beginning of 2012. And as the first hire, I came in to do most things. So I helped build out product and marketing and sales and growth and operation and support success, HR, payroll, yada, yada, yada. Help grow each one of the teams in the spaces up to a certain size, then hand it off to somebody else to keep growing, just kind of continue to pivot within the company where I was needed most. And that was always kind of very aligned with my personality. I'm very much of a builder. I'm very much of a 0 to 1, 2 to 10 type person. And even in the early days, probably about 18 or so months into the journey at Envision, I started even missing like the earlier days. So I started getting involved in coaching and mentoring early stage founders who were behind where we were at that point with growth and different kind of, I guess, hacks, which one of them we'll obviously talk about here today, and trying to help build some other startups. And over the last, I guess, 9-10 years, I've now coached, mentored, whatever the right term is, I think probably past 1,500 startups all over the world, all different verticals, all different spaces, 6 continents, and kind of very passionate about it and giving back and kind of taking that experience that I've had and helping build one company to now many companies, and also quite passionate about the future of work and very involved in the future of work and voicing the life-changing experience that I had for me many years ago and trying to bring it to everyone else, even though we're still kind of going through some bumpy ride with it, but we'll see.
This fractional CEO and chief of staff role that you're describing, tell us more what that means.
Sure. So very early on, what I'll do is I'll work with typically the CEO of an early stage company. It could be all the way from the ideation stage up to including very kind of early on to a Series B, usually about a Series B. The company should have or be hiring these people to kind of replace what I'm doing. And it's really kind of coming in to be their co-pilot. We're the right hand. So it's being very both strategic and executional at the same time. So trying to lay out big picture ideas for them, whether it's growth and revenue and hiring, it could be pretty much everything except for writing code. And then also breaking each of those big strategic pictures down into the individual steps that need to be done. In some cases, handling them myself. In some cases, handing them off to the team or setting them up myself and then handing off to a team. But it's really trying to be that, again, what I like to call it, the founder co-pilot, especially as a first-time CEO. Every decision that you make, it's basically like you're flying up a plane at night, right? And every decision you make will either fly you closer to your destination, which you hope for, or will fly you into the side of a mountain. So if you have someone that's sitting there next to you who's been through this once, twice, many times, who can say, hey, in this scenario, we should be thinking about that. Or in this case, like the last 4 companies I worked with, this was the best approach to do whatever, is an extremely valuable resource to a founder, especially that having to make those kind of life and death decisions, especially early on. And it's being kind of that co-pilot, that mental health therapist, that idea person, that whatever it is, wearing multiple hats as an advisor, as well as being one that's internal for companies.
We're talking about swag today. And to be honest, if you're an early stage startup, there is about a gazillion things you need to be doing, and swag is not on the top 10 list for sure. Why do you think it's one of the early effective brand building things that you should be doing?
Absolutely. So one of the first conversations that I normally have with a founder is telling them, hey, you need to, from pretty much day one, understand your exit path, right? And many founders don't like to think that way, but I said it's a necessity. And typically, what I like to say is there's four exit paths. Now, number one is you're making tens of millions of dollars a month in revenue. There aren't so many companies that are able to do that. Now, number two is you have technology that's 10x or 3x better than everyone else's. And what companies are doing now, like, okay, the better companies are putting version 2 into place now, and you're already working on version 3. If you're not building any kind of cutting edge technology that's better than anything that's out there, that's not you either. Number three is you have hundreds of millions of followers outside of social media. I don't think there's anything on this planet exists that has hundreds of millions of users. So the fourth one, I used to call branding. Maybe now it'd call it community. It's community branding, whatever the right term. In a few years, there'll be some other term. But the idea is kind of around community branding, where you may have call tens of thousands of users or hundreds of thousands of users or fans or followers that are on social media and every other arena every day promoting your brand. They love what you're doing. They love what you're building. They love the brand. They love every different thing that you're doing. And they're constantly talking about you. And what happens, and I've worked with companies in the space, and I've seen lots of companies in the space use the kind of this tactic where some company, a larger company that has a number of different products in their kind of portfolio, will come along and acquire that company, not because of the product, right? They could probably build the product themselves in a month, but they care about, let's say, those 100,000 social media followers who are active on social media all the time. They want those followers. So they'll buy that company to then take those 100,000 followers and then try to bring them into the other portfolio companies that they have. So most companies, most startups typically fall into this space, right? They're not making hundreds of millions of revenue. They don't have hundreds of millions of followers. They don't have super fantastic futuristic tech. So they fall into category number four. So if they understand from day one, you fall into category four, that means you need to make a lot of effort from day one on building that community, on building that brand, on building that connection to what you're doing and make people passionate about what you're doing. So every time they have a conversation, whether it's on social media, whether it's with friends or colleagues, they're talking about your brand. And that's one of the opportunities that swag presents, and it's something that we did and we had a lot of success with within Envision. I know we'll probably talk about that in a minute, but it's something that, again, when you're looking at SEO and ads and different things like that, I know, which we'll all dive into, right? If you understand that exit path gets to the point where you have a community and a brand, why not invest in those resources that will help you actually build that brand and that community?
Interesting how you call this exit paths, because these sound like growth mechanisms or like moats that are hard to replicate. So either just really good financials or really advanced technology or community, brand, loyalty, advocacy, whatever you call it, yep. Evangelism. Definitely. Yep. Brand building among those sounds very hard. How can swag help improve that? And you call it a hack. You've called it a hack like three times already.
Sure.
We're not up for hacks here. We're up for like honest, good, kind methods. How can it help promote the brand in a good and kind way?
Absolutely. So a user signs up for your product and they're using your product, hopefully on a daily basis or on a weekly basis and what have you. What we've seen, especially in the last 10 years, is every product needs to provide some value outside of the product. Right. And going back 10 years ago, the big thing was content, right? You put out great content, kind of keep people connected, which is, yes, still very important. But there's those other little things that, you know, what value can you give someone outside of just the product that you're using, right? They enjoy using your product, right? People enjoy using user list for the functionality that it has, but outside of their day-to-day of using the product, like what connection can you get with them to the brand and what you're actually building, what your big vision is and how you're helping people and how you're helping them. And swag gives that opportunity where people will do anything, honestly, for swag, for t-shirts and stickers. People love that idea. People love the ability just to get something right for free, right? They don't have to pay for that. And sometimes they'll know, we'll get into this story with Envision. People will happily pay for these items. But it's some little treat that you give them and is just as like a reward, right? And entrenching that relationship and saying, hey, no, thanks for using our product, right? Thanks for checking us out. Thanks for giving us an opportunity. And we want to give you these stickers. And yes, the hope is you stick like stickers on your laptop. Does anybody do that anymore? Like that used to be a thing, you know, like 10 years ago. I don't know if anyone does that anymore. Or go and so post them on social media. Like you want them to put it someplace that's public where other people will see it and be like, oh, what's that? Or what's that sticker? Or what's that company? But what it does to you is it builds that brand loyalty. It's like, hey, I got some stuff from this company. They gave me something, again, probably for not doing anything or just using the product. It kind of entrenches that relationship with your product versus someone else. And it makes it, especially over time with more things that you're doing, and again, we'll probably get into this, be much harder to pull you out. Not only because maybe it's just difficult and the cost of actually moving to a different product, but you've, in essence, kind of built a place in their heart. That makes, again, much more difficult to pull you out of, especially over a short term. Maybe over long term is a little bit different, but in a short term, it's much more difficult. So hopefully that's a sweet and loving way.
This conversation is super meta because we actually got discussing this because of Envision. And as a UI UX consultant previously, I had a big collaboration with Envision, wrote a book for them. So I have physical swag from them sitting in my office, like right now and up to date, even though it's been like 5 years since that time. And what they did, they didn't have their brand name on their assets. They had design makes everything possible spelled out in different like creative ways. And that was just so delightful how it didn't scream swag, but it definitely reminded of the brand. So when we started UserList and when we started this podcast, we landed at something similar, but for us, and that is better done than perfect. And then we also borrowed the approach of having a hand drawing illustrator draw it for us. So it's completely inspired by what you did at Envision ages ago. And now I have a chance to ask you how you arrived at that and what was the thought process behind the first iterations of swag?
Yeah, so the decision to do it initially was like any early stage startup, right? You have probably about $0 available for marketing and PR. That's just, you know, the way it is, especially early on. So we understood, hey, what's the biggest potential, again, bang for the buck, you know, return on investment that we can get to try to amplify the brand name and the vision of what we're building. And we came out on that idea of swag coming historically, right? If you've ever gone to any conference, right? Any large conference, tech conference, whatever, what's one of the most favorite parts of the conference? It's the whole bag of stuff that you walk away with. Like people have always loved swag, you know, in person and now with the virtual company. So we knew there was a value for swag, but we understood, right? It can't just be any swag. No, we wanted to be the right swag. Now, we were a design company. We're very focused on design and designers. So we just didn't want any kind of standard, like you said, here's our website. Here's our, whatever it is, our logo on something and kind of take that. We wanted to customize it specifically for the end user who's using the product. So you also knew, right? I think we gave items away for free. So it was engaged users, which again, we can dive into it now. We understood at the beginning that I think our limit was one project. They uploaded 10 screens and then maybe they did something else. Maybe had a comment or two. I forget exactly what the third criteria was. We sent them a free package. And it was a customized sticker, it was a customized pin, a customized postcard, and a custom designed envelope. It cost us $1.30 for those items. Our paid users, so when a user converted from free to paid, we sent them an additional gift that had all those items that I mentioned before. And on top of that, a custom designed sketchbook, right? Again, thinking in mind, it's a designer. So what do they tend to do? Like sketch ideas. So we sent them a custom designed sketchbook and a nice, whatever, liquid gel pen. So it wasn't just kind of a regular pen. It was very thoughtful in the idea of what's something that's valuable to a designer that they would want to use. So we sent that out. That cost us $1.50. So we understood, hey, we can get people to use this, obviously connect with it and be appreciative. And on two sides, one, they're awesome getting feedback. right? I know we could probably talk about this as well. So maybe highlight it here. We'll come back to it later, right? What is the typical cold SaaS reply rates for sales or marketing? 2%, right? That's what our reply rates were, right, in our onboarding mail, right? Because back then, no user list didn't exist and there were no tools that offered behavioral-based ones. So there were the day one, day three, day seven crap mails that people still send. They're terrible. They shouldn't do it. They need to be based on behavior, not a conversation for today, right? But 2% reply rate. Those mails, we got a, between a 50 to 70% reply rate, right? As an early stage company, you're desperate to get feedback from your users. And it's so difficult. You know, you try everything, UX research, and try those onboarding mails. And again, you're limited in what you're going to get. But when you send a message saying, hey, we're going to send you some free stuff, what would happen is people would be like, okay, my hands are tied. All right. Yes, I did see those three other emails that you sent me day one, day three, day seven, asking me for feedback. And I just like, no way, I'm not sending you anything. Like, don't bother me. But now that you're actually sending me something for free, like, again, I didn't really do anything besides actually using your product for it. Okay, now I'm going to take the time to provide you that feedback about the product that you're so wanting. And okay, maybe I have for you. So on one side, right, 50 to 70% reply rates are absolutely fantastic. Number two, you're getting that feedback that you really need to iterate your product. And then it obviously goes to help build a brand and hopefully get those people, which it did, on social media to share pictures of the swag that we sent them. And then all of a sudden their followers saw that pictures and are like, hey, how do I get some of this swag? And then the virality is just kind of built in. When you build something, when you create the right stuff in the right space, it just builds on itself for that virality of people getting out there, sharing and wanting that stuff and coming back in. They're like, yeah, how do I get that? Yeah, just, right? Just sign up the product, use the product. I know we could probably talk about our t-shirts things maybe later, but I think those are like the big opportunities, especially for early stage companies.
Let's talk about the mechanics. Did you send this out in your first email or only a few days later after someone has activated?
Yeah, so this, I guess, was a behavioral-based, as much as no behavioral-based was possible back then. It was, I guess, a user who hit these criteria, right? So again, had one project, uploaded 10 screens, again, maybe shared something. So we had like three or four criteria, which to us meant, hey, this person's engaged, right? They've passed the onboarding stage. They're now in the, well, I don't know, call it discovery, aha moment stage that we've kind of gotten them. They've gotten to past a point where, hey, they're just kind of kicking the tires and they're actually trying this out. And right at that moment, like as soon as we can, hey, we want to be in front of your face. Hey, we want to connect with you, right? We want to give you something. Like we want to have a conversation with you. We want to build a relationship with you as early on as we can. So it was very much focus on that behavioral, or again, when somebody paid and upgraded to a paid plan, but that usually obviously came after the free one was sent as well. So it was very, very customized to behavior. So we just weren't sending to everybody because, right, that probably would have cost us quite a bit of money. But again, it wouldn't have had the return investment, right? We wanted to focus on, here are people that are at the cusp, like they've gotten past the point, I'm going to call it of no return. Like they're using it, they're enjoying the product. Hey, let's now connect with them. Let's like now lovingly not put our claws in them. Let's now kind of give them a warm hug, like some video, I'm giving a hug here to you, but like giving them a nice like hug and connect with them that will build a lasting relationship, which it certainly did.
In that email, did you ask for things like feedback in exchange for the email, for their like ability to request a shirt? Or was it just like, hey, let us know if you want a shirt, or tell us your address if you want a shirt? How did you do it?
Yeah, so the shirt was a little bit different. And I'll get to that one next. But it was basically like the subject line was, hey, we want to send you a free gift. And it was just saying, hey, no, thank you so much for checking out the app. No, we see you've been pretty active and enjoying the app. Hey, we want to send you some free stuff. Note to thank you for using the product. I think we had like a form. No, click this form to send your address, fill out the form. And then as part of right every onboarding mail that everybody uses, to, regardless of day one, day three, day seven, whatever it is, right, we're a company of designers building a product for designers. We're trying to build a better product for you. What can we do to build a better product? Like we want you to be involved in building this company and building the future of design. What are we doing right? Just talk to us, like share feedback. And right, it was not, hey, we'll give you this free stuff. Hey, we're going to give you the free stuff either way. Whether you send us feedback, you don't send us feedback, doesn't really matter. We want, again, because we want to get that hug for you for that relationship building. But we obviously saw significantly most people replying back at that point saying, hey, here's what I think, here's what we can improve, here's what I like, here's what I don't like. Yes, I would love to set up a conversation and so on and so forth. For the t-shirts, I guess we can kind of dive into that. We also, as you noted, we had a graphic designer create us a custom designed t-shirt that we would give away, I think two of them every week via Twitter contest. On our website, and it may have been like the app, like there's like a little call to action. You tweeted a specific message, right, with specific content, hashtags, and at mentioned our Twitter handle. And it was basically me, and I think it was probably going through TweetDeck, just kind of like closing my eyes and like scrolling down and just kind of, picking one at random to, hey, congratulations, you win. And we'd give t-shirts away that way. So after like a few months, we would start getting 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 emails a week of users saying, hey, how do I buy one of these really awesome t-shirts? And my reply was usually, no, we don't sell them. Like we give them away via Twitter contest. And they're like, yeah, I know. But I said, oh, no, so just no, keep tweeting. And they're like, no, you don't get it. I've been tweeting for like 3, 4, 5 months and I can't win. Here's my money. Give me a t-shirt. How do I get one of these things? So I'm like, okay, I'll tell you what, right? Go sign up for our professional plan, which I think at the time was $25. Send me a screenshot of your invoice or receipt. Send me the t-shirt size and the address, and I'll send you one. And I tell you, when I say 100%, I honestly mean 100%. Within 5 to 10 minutes of me sending that email, I got a reply back. Here's the screenshot, size medium, here's my address, can't wait to get the t-shirt. Okay. So that t-shirt package, which also came with all the stuff that we mentioned before, had like the custom design t-shirt, that package cost us $15. So for $15, the first month, we were guaranteed $10 in revenue. We knew they would typically stick around for at least 2 to 3 more months. So we were pretty much kind of guaranteed like at least $75 worth of revenue just by sending them that t-shirt. So it was a no-brainer for us. And then again, right, they would take pictures of themselves and post it on social media. And right, then all of a sudden you got like that FOMO idea, like, oh, how do I get one of those? Why did my friend get one? Or why did this designer get one? Or we had, especially that was somewhat of a bit of our hack getting into companies and enterprise, like, hey, my colleague in the desk over me, they got a t-shirt. Like, what do I need to get a t-shirt? Okay, yeah, we'll be happy, send me to Facebook or Airbnb or whatever company this was. Yeah, we'll send you a t-shirt. Yeah, no problem. And again, entrenching that relationship and building that engagement with the customer was absolutely critical and crucial for us.
Have you been doing anything more with that throughout their life cycle as they stuck with you for a year or two or down the road?
There were definitely things that were done afterwards. Like just different kind of various campaigns, probably obviously some of the things that you worked on with more, I think, campaign stuff. But most of the stuff was very focused early on. Again, we wanted to kind of get ourselves to build that connection with you very early on. So I definitely think there's a value of doing it even like farther down the line. But the most important time to do it is very early on, especially these days when there's a million startups launching every day and everyone's building the same thing. Like you need to somewhat differentiate yourself is, right, they can go use any of the other tools, right? Hopefully you're doing all the other things right. Right. Feel free to reach out to me about those. But like that's your in to build that connection, build that relationship, give them something beyond the product that they're using that they connect with you and the brand with. Like, hey, wow, I really love what this brand is doing and what they're giving me and what that connection I now have with this company is. So especially early on is the most crucial point in time. But I think there's definitely other times, especially if you're launching a new campaign or you're doing some kind of new program. We did a lot of stuff with design leadership and we gave no stuff out for that. So I think if you're doing different programs like in the life cycle of the company, there's definitely a value for that. But the most important time is like right up front, getting them connected to the brand is literally as immediately as possible.
Interesting. And our own recommendations, because we do share like templates and blueprints for your campaigns. We have offering swag as an important part of the customer loyalty campaign, but that only starts when you've been with the product for a while and you're like a loyal customer. So that only reinforces that. I'm glad to hear this different angle when you can leverage that in the early days.
Yep.
Swag, quality, execution, like fulfillment. Did you delegate that? Was there someone packing those packages hands-on in your office? How was it happening?
For the first probably year, that was me. That was one of my like six full-time jobs that I had. I had like boxes of shirts and stuff. And I used to go to the post office probably like every other day. They would just know me by then. And like, thankfully, I could do a lot of this stuff, like to be like stamps.com, and you could just print out the stamps and go home, and like you didn't have to go wait there. I would just bring like mailbox cartons versus over there. But it was me. And I think one of the most impactful things, which now you could probably automate as well, was the handwritten note, right? And you can see that across lots of people that say it and saying it for years. It was literally like a yellow sticky note. And it said, no, thanks for trying out, or thanks for checking out Envision. And I put my name on there. Like one sentence, one short sentence. But I'd probably say in probably at least 75% of the pictures that people sent of the swag, that handwritten note was always in the picture. So that had an impact. It wasn't like, right, it was a yellow sticky note. It wasn't a beautifully designed Envision, no white note or note thing that I put it on. It was just a yellow sticky note. But it was enough of an impact that somebody, hey, took the time to write a little handwritten note that they included it in most of the pictures that were sent. But yes, this was very much my job. And then eventually when we were obviously in super scale mode, one person couldn't do it. Then I handed it off to somebody else. A great thing for companies to do, especially early on, is responsible high school and college kids, right? Who could be, you know, working at a pizza shop or doing some kind of like manual labor or something like that's hard, and we're here, just pack some stuff together, put in the mailbox, and you know, get paid no more than you're probably getting paid at some kind of local job. That's one of the, we'll call it, not hacks. What's the nicer word for hacks we're going to use in swag?
It's a downright a hack, because for us, for example, the organizational problem is that everybody is around the globe, and sending US mail from Europe is just not as, you know, ecologically exciting, at least. And there could be a US-based intern doing that, based on what you're saying. That's pretty exciting of an idea.
yeah, absolutely. So we did that. And then eventually, obviously, when we were in super scale mode, when it was just not, we couldn't have one person doing it anymore, then we brought on some third-party swag provider. And I think we probably went through a couple of iterations of those over the years as well, just because there was too many. Like we were getting probably 100 every day that hit the criteria that were replying back with their address. And no college kid or high school kid with as much time that they didn't want to be doing studying. They just simply weren't spending their time, you know, packaging all those things. It was just, it was too much work. But hey, that's a great problem to have, right?
When it comes to picking different things, objects, shall it be a mug? Shall it be a sticker? Yep. Shall it be a shirt? And by the way, like, I love the idea of shirts, but I never wear one because I prefer different, like more complex silhouettes. And so I donate all the shirts to my husband. So I always like book his size when asked for it. And giving a shirt can be pretty like a sensitive thing if someone is not very body positive. Like, so any other like hidden things that we should be aware of when picking swag type?
I think that the biggest thing is really what kind of connects with your brand. What are you doing? So there's been companies that I've worked with that are doing something in like the music space where we'll kind of send them kind of custom headphones, right? They're not, you know, they're not Bose or something. Like they're kind of, you know, the cheapish headphones, but they have on the outside, like on the earphones, our custom, on the company's custom logo on there. There was one company that I was working with who was doing like meditation and sleep. So we did a custom eye mask. So it was very like something that's very specific to what your product is building. So if you were, I don't know, if you're a marketplace for something, whatever it is, and you're giving out a mug, right? Unless you're selling coffee or like tea or some kind of something like that, then there's no point of sending a mug because there's no connection. And again, that was the idea that we learned in Envision, right? We sent those, the sketchbook and the pen, because what do designers do? It used to be the white napkin that they used to draw on. So, hey, we give you a custom sketchbook that you can take these sketches and then, you know, come on to Envision and continue them after. So I think it's important, even outside of t-shirts, it's just understanding what your business does and kind of what connection it's, right? If you're accounting software, right? I guess, I don't know if people use calculators anymore. Maybe they still do, but it could be even like a custom calculator, or it could be like even something just interesting, like in the old days, right? You used to use an abacus for math. Maybe a custom abacus, right? It's something that's talked about, right? You're probably not going to use it, but it's something interesting that you would keep on your desk. Then now every time you look at it, you're like, ah, you think about that company. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a t-shirt. Again, I definitely think there's the right use cases for t-shirts, and there's probably the wrong use cases like many things. But t-shirts tend to be the standard. So even the t-shirts of understanding what's the right t-shirt. No, so Envision, we use the American Apparel 5050 t-shirt because it had the right texture, it had the right feel to it. It wasn't one of those kind of stock undershirts or t-shirts that you would get, you know, at a market, you know, 10 for a dollar or something like that. It was the right feeling. It was the right logo. It was the right fonts. It was the right colors. So all these bits and pieces are extremely important. And again, most companies will just maybe think, oh, a t-shirt, hey, let me just stick a logo on a t-shirt and then send it to you. Like, in those cases, it's the same thing. Like, they just go in a pile to be donated somewhere else. If it's the right t-shirt, if it's comfortable for me to wear, if I want to go, you know, like, comfortable for me to go on a run or go no workout with or go out with, I'm going to wear it. But if it's something that I don't feel comfortable wearing just as a feel, there's no point.
I can tell you our story. We are also doing t-shirts here at UI Breakfast. So we use Cotton Bureau as a provider. And the way we do this, we let people submit a form and they go and pick not just the size, but also the color. And we have, like, I don't know, 15 colors they can choose from, different sizes, different fits as well. So they can truly put together something that they would wear.
Absolutely.
And the way we got to that provider is by following Fathom Analytics by Paul Jarvis. I think they have a fabulous personal / business brand. So we were like, if these guys are cool enough with Cotton Bureau, then we can be cool enough with that as well. So highly recommended. But they don't approve just everything. And also before that, we tried Printful and the quality was unfortunately not even close to exciting there. Even though maybe we tried the wrong kinds of shirts, I don't know.
Yeah. In the beginning, I think we used a company out of Florida called Threadbird. And they were specifically, that was their business, was custom designed t-shirts. So it wasn't like they printed everything. We had a different vendor for everything that we sent at the beginning. So that was the t-shirt. I mean, that's all they did. So they knew how to print beautifully made t-shirts. And I think certainly was part of our popularity. And then I think, again, we moved on to other providers that were also able to provide, you know, maybe American Apparel 5050 and the right inks. And again, we were so specific. It had to be the right type of ink, right? Not just standard ink, had to be whatever, water soluble, whatever, something ink, and the right color and the right this and that and the other. So everything had to be very specific.
When it comes to B2B versus B2C, you mentioned that B2C has the most power for using swag, but in general, what's your sentiment there?
I think by far B2C is, because I mean, B2C, you're going after the individual. And even life cycle, you know, sometimes B2B companies, whether what type of product it is, whether it's enterprise, what have you, could be, you know, top-down funnel. So you may be using the product and, right, you didn't really have an opportunity. You didn't have a choice, right? The company implemented said tool and that's what you're using. But especially for companies that are coming from like the bottom-up approach, you know, the SaaS approach, going for like individual user and individual team, like that's the sweet spot for B2B, where you're going after, as we did, a single designer at Google, and then a single team at Google, or again, whatever team and whatever space it is, like you're going for individual users, individual teams, get them connected. And what do? They become internal champions. And then when you want to come and you want to come from like the bottom approach, hey, by the way, you know, you have 5 paid accounts and like 35 free users, and you have like 3 or 4 champions because they love using your product and they've probably gotten some free swag. That conversation to get an enterprise or a higher level paid plan in there is significantly easier at that point. Because again, you're organizing something better, right? You're trying to centralize all that stuff for the person who's making the decision, but you have internal champions who are now connected with the brand, connected with the company. They love what you're doing. A is helping them with their job, but that, again, that connection with the swag is making them an ambassador and an evangelist for you and making them more connected and passionate about what you're doing. And especially within that, right? If you're coming at that approach, and especially from the bottom up funnel, again, if you're an accountant, if you're a growth manager, whatever it is, if you're building a tool and giving a tool that makes their job easier, makes them more productive, makes them more money, saves them time, right? If you're problem market solving something, people are going to love you because, again, you're saving them time, you're making them more money, you're doing something that's benefiting them. Hey, you already kind of had them in the right spot. Now you give them something on top of that, like you're golden at that point.
Let's reiterate that. The swag's goal is not to replicate your logo, but rather to inspire conversations and make it wearable and enjoyable.
Yep.
And I do know you have another case study from a personal training app, and you achieved some good results with that. What were the details?
Yeah, so this was a a company that I came across actually that was here in my local city, somebody that I connected with, and they were building a product for personal trainers to kind of help them run their own businesses. And they were trying all the kind of usual marketing tries. I won't call again. We're not going to call them hacks. Different ideas to kind of get growth and get new people to the site and what have you. And they weren't achieving overly fantastic results. So there was a conference in Los Angeles, which was the biggest or is the biggest conference for personal trainers. I think there's like some 10 to 15,000 people that would attend this conference every year. And the company wanted to bring swag, right? Because what do you do at an on-site conference? You give out swag. So their idea was to bring a gym towel with their logo on there. So yes, again, right? If you're a personal trainer, you're probably working out of the gym, but like, how inspired are you to bring said towel to the gym? Maybe not overly inspired, right? That's kind of like the standard stuff that you kind of toss in the corner. So I said, right, let's think outside the box, right? Let's try to think of something that's going to be catchy, that's going to get people over to your booth, that people are going to talk about at the event. So we came up again with a t-shirt idea. And the idea that we came up with was a t-shirt that said, it was either you want a body like this or you want muscles like this. One of the two, I don't remember what it was. It was one of those two and had like the logo on the bottom.
So cheesy.
absolutely cheesy. And what the team did, so we went with that. And when they got to the event, right, they found the big muscular guys and girls with like the big muscles and stuff. And they gave them a t-shirt, right? Asked them to kind of, and everyone found it cheesy, but kitschy, like, oh, that's so funny. So they put the t-shirt on. And then all of a sudden they'd be walking around the conference for like 2 or 3 days, however long it was. And then people would run up to them and be like, that's such an awesome t-shirt, right? Yes, I want a body like this. Or I want a body with muscles like that. Hey, where did you get that t-shirt? Oh, this company over there is giving them out. So the company, we also did the approach of, I think we brought maybe like 70 t-shirts or something like that to the conference to give out to the right people. And then the rest of the idea was, hey, you came to the booth, you wanted to get a t-shirt. Hey, no problem, right? Go sign up. Same type thing. Go sign up. Go to the website, right? Drive more traffic. Sign up for the product. Send us an email. We'll send you a t-shirt. No problem. So I think that within those 3 days, they got, I believe it's about 850 signups to the product. They had whatever, a few thousand leads that came from that, or people hit the website. Things like 850 signups, and I think it was about 500 of them, I think, we're still using, were active, engaged, and they probably converted about half of those to paid accounts just based on that t-shirt, right? So for a team that was struggling to get people to the website and get people to sign up and get people to convert, like one cheesy t-shirt, the return on investment of what that cheesy t-shirt cost to what no return investment it gave was absolutely fantastic. But again, it was the right thing, right? It wasn't just the logo. It wasn't just, again, it was also the right type of t-shirt, you know, the kind of tight fitting and the Heather look and blah, blah, blah. It was the right t-shirt, the right design with the right logo and the right font and all those things. And it was the right thing to make. If it was just a t-shirt, like a white t-shirt or a black t-shirt with the company logo, would have done nothing. But that cheesy thing was that connected that people talked about. Like, hey, where do I get that? How do I get an awesome t-shirt like that? And people wanted it. Well, yeah, no problem. Just sign up and we'll send you a t-shirt.
Among other ideas worth mentioning, one I've seen Balsamic mockups execute is they give you, instead of offering you a specific piece, they offer you credits for their swag store. And people can buy it, but if you have that credits coupon code, you can actually order something for yourself. Like I was eyeing an apron, for example, or somebody would maybe enjoy a tote bag or something like that. And worth mentioning, the Freddies sent out by MailChimp. Do you own one by any means? Because I do. It's like sitting on my shelf.
I surprisingly don't, especially for how many companies in the early days we used MailChimp that I worked with and never got a gorilla or the chimp in the mail. But yeah, I mean, the idea with the store that Balsamic does, I think it's probably a great idea once you're further down the line. Again, once you have more of that brand connection to say, hey, pick something of your choice. But for me, I think it's sending you something. Again, we're making that effort. It's not we're saying, here, take like a gift card and kind of go pick something of yourself. You know, I'll talk about this, we'll kind of hint to this. the employee experience, right? I'm very big on employee culture and very big on all that different stuff. And one of those ideas that I'm very big into is customized gifting, right? So some companies will give year-end bonuses, right? If you did a good enough job, you get a bonus. And then companies, especially startups that didn't have the money, they were starting to give Amazon gift cards. Like, hey, you did something great. Here's like a $500, $1,000 Amazon gift card. Okay, no, there's lots of stuff I can buy with Amazon and I can go shop on my own. But when you do something more personalized, when I'm the company or I'm the employee, taking the time to give you something personal, right? I'm wrapping the thing together. I'm handwriting a note. I'm sending it to you. Again, it's more personal. There was more effort that was taken into saying, hey, I'm going to package this thing. I'm going to send you this thing versus, here's like a coupon. Go kind of buy what you want. I think, yes, down the road, and like Envision also had a marketplace as well, that when you have a successful brand that people are very connected to, yes, I think certainly it's something to look at. But early on, it's very much, I think, of that effort, that little effort, right? I can't use this word again, that you're taking the time to package stuff together, write a handwritten note, I'm giving you something special just for you, and I'm doing it for you, right? I'm making that effort for you versus like, oh, here, kind of just, here's something, right? Here's a coupon, go run with it.
My brother is a software developer, like in the senior camp. So when he joined his latest employer, they gave him a bag of swag and a laptop. Yeah. And I'm not even sure what made him delighted more, because they definitely, both him and his wife, were very delighted about the swag, specifically like stickers and other little things.
Yeah, with employee stuff, there was one, again, I know we're somewhat going off topic here, but I always tried to make the effort of getting to know my team. So it was one project I was working on that I knew someone here that was actually living in Israel was very into wine, always talking about wine. So he also, I think, was a developer, launched and like worked extra hours and whatever it was, did a great job. So instead of sending a gift package or a wine box, I sent him on a 2-day wine tasting tour. Like a car picked him up, took him to like 3 wineries one day, 3 wineries the next day. He was given a certain amount to buy 1 bottle of red wine, 1 bottle of white wine, and he had to give a presentation when he came back into the office the next day. This was a company that were in the office to kind of tear, like, why did he pick this wine? Why this wine was so good? What you paired with, blah, blah, blah. This was probably 5 years ago. Whenever I talk to this person, which is every, 2-3 months, this person always brings up this customized gift that he gave him, right? He's been given like swag and all these things over the years. That personalized level of gift, that knowing him, loved wine, sent him on a wine tour, talks about it 5 years down the road. Like, it made such an impact in that person. 5 years later, the person still talks about it, like every time I talk to them. So again, with that idea of swag, when you're giving it something, not just a t-shirt, not just a mug, but again, those cases of like a sleep app, right? You give a sleep mask or no headphones, or when it's something specific to what the product does and who the end user is and what job or role or what have you, or what they're using the product for, like that's where the impact is truly made.
On the personal brand side, there is a super simple hack of bringing gifts to conferences that is not even branded at all, but it's just bringing something from your country of origin and gifting it to a few most friendly people,
Mm-hmm.
It is really underestimated. Like, it really helps and it's really fun. And also, I've been on the receiving side. I still have a couple like tins in the house. I store tea in a cookie jar that my friend Charlie gave me like 5 years ago. And I love it. Even though like...
Yeah. And the most important thing about, yes, is the feeling. But every time, let's say you go to that tea tin and you take a tea tin out of there, you think about that story. You think about that experience. And it's the same idea with like the brand. When you send them something, again, whether it's the eye mask or the t-shirt or the sketchbook or whatever, when you use that sketchbook to do a project maybe totally different than you're doing from that day, you still think of that experience of like, hey, when Envision sent you this sketchbook just for trying out the product or paying for the product, or this sleep mask that maybe you still use 3 days down the line, you don't use the app maybe anymore or whatever it is, but you still get that memory, that we entrench that memory in your brain forever. And that brings up kind of like that emotional response. And that's the greatest thing that you can ask for.
Amazing. As we're wrapping up today's episode, what does one do and one don't when it comes to swag for SaaS?
Sure. So I think we probably covered them already. The one do, I'd say, maybe let's start early, right? Start very early on and being very focused in the life cycle of the user. Find your onboarding process. Find your where your aha moment is in the product usage and hit them at that moment. Once they've crossed that kind of line, that's when you want to engage them. For the don't, just don't send them anything, right? Just don't send them a t-shirt. Just don't send them a mug. Or just don't send them a gym towel because, right? People don't want more stuff, right? It's the idea of my thought of product market fit versus problem market fit, right? The world, we don't need more products. We need solutions to problems. So the world, like people don't need more t-shirts or more towels or more mugs. Like send them something that's going to be memorable that they're going to enjoy using and they're going to think about every time they use it again in the future.
Amazing. Where can people find you online?
Best place. Let's say LinkedIn is always a good place. They can find me on LinkedIn and Twitter. My website is just my name, Scott Markovitz with an S at the end, not a Z, scottmarkovitz.com. If they're doing remote work, I have a podcast called Leading From Afar. It's a podcast all about leading in remote environments. It was launched during the early stages of the pandemic. And I thought to myself, hey, what's the best thing I can do for humanity these days now that everybody is working remotely? Now, let me share at that point my 8 years of experience building and leading remote teams and companies and just sharing something that hopefully helps every company do remote better. And those, I think, are probably the best places to connect with me.
Thank you so much for sharing your insight. It's been great chat and hope you have a wonderful rest of your week, Scott.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you. It was a great conversation and hope to be helpful to your community.
Thanks for listening. You can find a written recap for this episode at userless.com/podcast. Please help us grow by leaving a review on iTunes.